This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So this morning, the Democrats decided to announce their two impeachment articles. Two. The most important part of this announcement that happened earlier this morning to set our day right was not having anything to do with the two impeachment articles. In fact, of the 14 minutes, I've actually condensed it down to 22 seconds. 22 seconds that are the most meaningful of what we saw earlier today. And it happened to be the final 22 seconds of this press conference with Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, flanked by her committee chairs. Where are they going? They're walking out. Why are they walking? Don't tell me not to ask questions, lady. Where are they going? Those 22 seconds tell you all you need to know about today's press conference and the sham of impeachment. Those 22 seconds were not a single one of those people standing up there took a question. Not a single question from the media there. Part of the reason why they didn't want to take any questions is because under any kind of scrutiny, any fair scrutiny, they would be seen as scam artists. They would be seen as ideologically driven partisan hacks. Because while they're going after the president for abuse of power and obstruction, what's the one thing that they left out of these articles of impeachment? The one thing they've been talking about this entire time. The one thing that they focus grouped and decided to change how they were talking about the president. Bribery. Where'd bribery go? Not that they had any evidence of that. They don't have evidence of abuse of power or obstruction either. But they went with that. Where'd bribery go? That's kind of weird. Why'd you guys focus on bribery so long? Is it because your focus group that's happening behind the scenes kind of made sense with abuse of power because that's a nebulous term, or obstruction, which doesn't actually mean anything in the way that they're providing it? Is it that bribery is very specific? Is it that when you tell people that the president bribed a country for an investigation that didn't actually happen to withhold funds which weren't actually withheld, you think that maybe that just fell flat? People weren't going to buy it, but you think, oh, well, we've gone this far. We might as well do something. Right, Jerry Nadler? Let's talk about abuse of power.
It is an impeachable offense for the president to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. That is exactly what President Trump did when he solicited and pressured Ukraine to interfere in our 2020 presidential election.
The 2020 election was not mentioned at all during the course of their conversation. But please continue and keep shouting.
Thus damaging our national security, undermining the integrity of the next election, and violating his oath to the American people.
Is it a personal benefit or a societal benefit if Joe Biden and his son Hunter were actually involved in corruption? I mean, think about that for a second, and that's why they don't want Hunter Biden to actually testify in all of this. That is why in the House version of this, and it's unlikely to be the case in the Senate version, but they decided to not have Hunter Biden testify. They decided not to have Adam Schiff testify. It's because the second that we find out there was actual corruption, their entire case completely crumbles. It crumbles literally in its entirety. Because obviously, if Joe Biden and his son, who was put in a position because of his last name with a corrupt company in Ukraine, if that turns out to be 100% true, wouldn't it be a societal benefit for us to know about that before, for Democrats to know about that before putting up as their nominee Joe Biden, someone who would clearly lose an election if that kind of corruption came out? Wouldn't it be to our benefit as taxpayers not to give money in foreign aid to a country that's corrupt? Wouldn't it make sense that the president and this administration might ask some basic questions before giving money to the Ukraine, particularly after the country of Ukraine spent some time, not more than Russia, but some time in trying to undermine his campaign? This is absolutely ridiculous. That's not abuse of power. Joe Biden himself, on record, on video, said that they withheld, under the Obama administration, they withheld $1 billion in foreign aid until a corrupt prosecutor was fired. I am glad they did that. I'm glad they withheld that funding because the prosecutor was 100% corrupt. Wasn't that a societal benefit, or was that quid pro quo? Was that an abuse of power? Okay, give me obstruction. Go.
Here, too, we see a...
Here, too, really? Okay.
Here, too, we see a familiar pattern in President Trump's misconduct.
Okay, tell us.
A president who declares himself above accountability, above the American people, and above Congress's power of impeachment, which is meant to protect against threats to our democratic institutions, is a president who sees himself as above the law.
Okay.
We must be clear. No one, not even the president, is above the law.
Well, I mean, Hillary Clinton is above the law, but okay, fine. What was the law that was broken? They haven't actually told us the law. We're talking about obstruction, right? We'll get into that a little bit later on in the show because that is the biggest sham of them all, and they know that. Did any of them mention the laws that were broken other than Trump bad? Here too, Trump bad. Congressman Doug Collins, go.
But it's very telling that they all walked off stage and didn't answer a question. That, to me, is really telling. Why would the Speaker of the House, you just announced articles of impeachment, you had your five committee chairs, you had Adam Schiff, you had Jerry Nadler, you had, and they wouldn't take questions? I mean, that tells me that they're really not inherently comfortable with what they're doing, and I think this is a problem that we have. Adam Schiff has heard his own voice for so long, he simply believes what he's saying without any evidence of truth or any evidence of, of facts here. They simply want to get the clock and the calendar because they are so obsessed and so fearful that President Trump is going to win again next November that they don't even perceive the problems that they have. Sten, it's very telling to me. Mueller didn't come up, neither did the fact of the quid pro quo bribery, all the focus group problems that they've had in the last little bit. They went with abuse of power, which they can define.
Isn't that weird? And he makes the perfect point, how they define it. They're not defining it as a matter of law. They're defining it as simply, oh, he didn't submit to all the subpoenas that we put out there. As if simply putting out a subpoena means it 100% has to be followed if it was put out there in an abuse of power, ironically. That's why we have that other branch of government, the judicial. The judiciary is supposed to look into this. In fact, they're trying to look into it. They can look into it, but Adam Schiff is in the way. He's saying we couldn't wait. In fact, listen to this argument and tell me if you hear anything, to use a progressive buzzword, problematic.
The argument, why don't you just wait, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election?
One more election?
Why not let him cheat just one more time?
What was the first cheat? So now he cheated in 2016 with Ukraine? Or with Russia? Because you're not bringing him up on any charges having to do with Russian collusion, which didn't actually take place. You've not brought up, as Doug Collins just noted, anything having to do with the Mueller report. What in the world are you talking about?
Why not let him have foreign help just one more time?
What was the first time? Ukraine was going against the president during his election. Russia, you found no evidence of collusion. I know you want to pretend that some Russian hacker is responsible for why Hillary Clinton is in the president and not the fact that she didn't go to Wisconsin, right? That played no role whatsoever in an election where she got the popular vote but lost the Electoral College, which should tell people like Adam Schiff, if he wasn't such a partisan hack, that, oh, maybe there was a strategy mishap on the Clinton side, but no, it was Russia.
That is what that argument amounts to.
Is it, though? Is it?
The president's misconduct goes to the heart of whether we can conduct a free and fair election in 2020.
So the last election wasn't free and fair. Is that what you're saying? So that's what you're saying. Okay, because that's not having anything to do with the claims today in the articles of impeachment. their words don't match their actions. I'm not shocked that they did this. I'm shocked that people still don't find this so transparent. At least I hope that's not the case. I hope that people who are on the fence this entire time are looking at this and saying, well, that's weird. You claim quid pro quo over and over and over again. Then you said bribery, but it still meant quid pro quo. Why didn't you go after the president for that? Oh, so there's no evidence of that, but now there is for this other stuff? Okay. That doesn't make sense. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. 15 minutes from now, Dr. Ben Carson is going to stop by. They got my article in front of them and segment I did with Ben Shapiro reacting to the botched homelessness feature over at 60 Minutes. They like what I had to say. And so they said, hey, you want to talk with the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development about the issues? I'm all like, yep. So he's going to be on at 3:30. If you don't have the KTH smartphone app, you should download it, because when we got interviews like that, we send alerts. Text app to 1-800-465-877. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Democratic State Representative Gail Tarleton, an ideologue, a Seattle progressive. She's my state senator, state representative, excuse me. She's running for Washington State Secretary of State. This would be absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, catastrophic if she were to become the next Secretary of State. She is a fringe politician. She's likable. I like her. I get along with her. We disagree on pretty much everything. But she is a fringe politician. Can anyone honestly say that about Kim Wyman, the Republican incumbent, who's been doing this two terms in a row now? Can anyone actually say that about Kim Wyman? Can they look at Kim Wyman, Republican or Democrat, and say, oh, you're very clearly a Republican and you're a fringe one of that? No, they can't. Because she's been incredibly fair and incredibly effective in the work that she's done. Then you look at Gail Tarleton, who does not like Republicans. She doesn't. She angry tweets Trump all day long. You want someone like that in charge of our voting? Really? And her main point for running is absolutely absurd. Seattle Times did this write-up yesterday. I can't remember who said it. It might have been Jim Walsh, the state representative. Someone posted on Facebook, like, reading the write-up of Gail Tarleton running for Secretary of State actually reads like a whole list of accomplishments from Kim Wyman. Because there's really nothing that Tarleton actually wants to do that isn't being done right now to protect our election systems. She says, she argues that Wyman's not doing enough. That's kind of weird. How many cyber attacks have been successful? We know they've happened. Kim Wyman was on the show. Secretary Wyman has made that point that they've been happening here, just like they've been happening at the 49 other states. How many were actually successful, Producer Peyton?
None.
None. Doesn't that kind of indicate that we're doing something correct? In fact, when you look at how we're viewed in Washington State and the processes we have on the books, we are seen as one of the state leaders in election security. So to argue that we're not doing enough when we haven't had a single instance that you can point to and say, had we done this, this wouldn't have happened, that just seems rather weird to me. It seems rather weird. But she's not running. Gail Tarleton's not running to make a point of what could be done, right? She's not running on that. She's running as simply, I'm a Seattle progressive, put me in office. They're banking on the fact that in 2020, you're going to have a whole bunch of progressives, primarily from Seattle, that are going to come out in full force to support whomever the Democratic nominee for president is going to be, because they hate Trump so much. She's hoping to ride on that. She's hoping that a D next to her name will automatically put her in that position. Now, the good news, though we shouldn't take this for granted, we've had a Republican in office in this particular position since, I believe, the mid-60s. So generally speaking, across the board, maybe it's voters who say, okay, I'm going Democrat for everything. Let me at least give a Republican something. I'm not entirely sure. I know what the Secretary of State does. I'll just give it to the Republican. Maybe that's what it is. Don't take that for granted, because there are going to be a lot of motivated people. But if you want to know why Gail Tarleton should be dismissed as a candidate, is one clip that I'm going to play for you that's only 57 seconds long. Now, why is it so long? Well, a good portion of it is silence. A good portion of this is silence. Because we were talking about at the time, this was a few months ago, sanctuary state status here in Washington State, something that she has supported as a Democrat. She supports sanctuary state laws. Listen to this. Do you believe someone here illegally should be deported if they commit a felony or misdemeanor? So on top of them.
Actually, I don't want to automatically assume they should be deported.
So they've committed a murder or a rape.
Yeah, no, that they should be in jail. They should go to prison.
Yes, but once they got out of prison, do you think just as a general sense of, regardless of the nuances of who participates,
it's
with
not
who,
a difficult question.
Just as a matter of deportation, should they be deported once they get out of jail?
One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five Mississippi, six Mississippi,
this is long.
Seven Mississippi,
Jason,
eight Mississippi, nine Mississippi, 10 Mississippi.
I don't know. I don't know how I would make that decision. I think it would have to be on the basis of the proposed law in front of me.
Okay. That's ridiculous. Let me be very clear. Most normal human beings who don't look at things in such partisan ways would say if you're in this country illegally and you rape someone, once you're done doing your time, you should be deported. That's not controversial. That's not controversial at all. I would argue even in Seattle, that's got to be considered a mainstream position. That's how fringe he is. Do you want someone who's that fringe running our election system? I would argue not. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So really quickly, I want to put a bow on this story. We talked about it last week. Tim Ryan is a color commentary analyst over at the 49ers radio network, right?
Yeah, radio.
Okay. So he made comments that ended up landing him a one-game suspension, which he served this past weekend. He made comments this way about Lamar Jackson, the quarterback from the Baltimore Ravens.
His dark skin color with a dark football, with a dark uniform, you could not see that thing. I mean, you literally could not see when he was in and out of the mesh point.
Now, I said at the time he should not have made those comments, not because they're offensive. I don't think they're offensive in the context in which they were put out there. Clearly, he didn't have any nefarious intent. He was talking about the real-life implications of not being able to see the ball. It was uncouth because, you know, in 2019, even mentioning or thinking about someone's race at all will end up making you the beneficiary, let's say, of crazy people on Twitter. What happened over the weekend with Lamar Jackson?
Lamar Jackson tried to, or he answered the call, and he wore, they were wearing white on the road. He wore white Under Armour and a white glove to combat the point of having an advantage because of his dark skin color.
Now, was he doing that to point out how great of a football player he is versus I'm going to troll this guy and call him out for racism? Don't know. Haven't heard any comments from it. But let's be clear in that clip with Tim Ryan, he overwhelmingly goes out of his way to talk about how good of a quarterback Lamar Jackson is. Now we've got Richard Sherman weighing in. And it's kind of interesting. He, of course, is a 49er now, and he has been very outspoken on social justice issues and race issues. This is what he said.
Listened to the dialogue and saw it written, and honestly, I wasn't as outraged as everybody else. You know, I understand
outraged. He wasn't outraged
under a certain context and be offensive to some. But if you're saying, hey, this is a brown ball, they're wearing dark colors, and he has brown arm. Honestly, sometimes we were having trouble seeing it on film. You know, he's making a play fake, and sometimes he's swinging his arm really fast, and you're like, okay, does he have the ball on that play? And then you look up, and Ingram's running it. So it was technically a valid point. You know, you can always phrase things better. You can always phrase things and not say his black skin, you know.
So here's the question. If Richard Sherman said exactly what Tim Ryan said, would you argue it was racist? And that's a question for progressives. Now, they, of course, are going to say no because Richard Sherman is black and Tim Ryan is white. That's not how you should be judging this. You should listen to the context and the content. That's it. 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the J.C. Jackson Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. When 60 Minutes and Anderson Cooper traveled to Seattle to discuss our homelessness problem, they decided for some reason to ignore all the evidence on the ground of mental illness and drug and alcohol abuse, and instead claim that rent being too high is the reason why we've got a problem like the one we have. So instead of talking to Anderson Cooper, I've decided to talk to someone who actually knows about homelessness and reducing barriers to housing. Dr. Ben Carson is a member of President Trump's cabinet. He serves as the Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and he joins me now. Dr. Carson, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, particularly to talk about such an important topic.
So do you think simply citing high rent as a reason for homelessness is an accurate reflection of the reality, whether we're talking about Seattle or L.A., Austin, wherever?
Well, no, it's obviously multifactorial. Does the high price have something to do with it? Of course it does. Where you have the largest number of regulations, you have the largest rent numbers, and subsequently the largest number of people who can't afford the rent. But you have to recognize that as a society, we have done something that is almost unpardonable. You know, back in the 80s, in our attempt to become very compassionate, we took mentally ill people and we tossed them out on the street and with no ability to take care of themselves. You couple that with a tremendous opioid crisis that's going on and other types of drug addictions, and you've created the environment for a crisis, and that's exactly what we have. You also have policies that encourage this. When you tell people, you know, this is public space, therefore you can camp here, you can do whatever you want here, that's not what a public space is. A public space is a place that's supposed to be available for the public. That means all of the public, not for a group of people that's come and squat on it and make everybody else uncomfortable. So, you know, there's sometimes a lack of leadership that leads to that kind of thinking, which they actually think is compassionate, but it's not compassionate. Compassion is recognizing that we have certain citizens that have extreme needs, and what can we do to give those people the kind of life that will be acceptable? And that means when you're talking about mentally ill people, they have to be stabilized, but you have to have the services. You have to be able to give them their medications. You have to be able to give them the counseling that they need and the direction. Otherwise, it's like putting an immature person out onto the street and telling them to fend for themselves. That's not compassionate at all.
Well, you've made a point of we need to focus on evidence-based policies, because there are plenty of policies out there that actually work. So what does Seattle need to do?
Well, you know, Seattle needs to recognize that, again, we need to have appropriate laws and policies so that we don't, first of all, act as a magnet to draw these people. And then secondly, the ones who are there, I believe in something I call housing first, second, and third. Housing first, get them off the street. Housing second, figure out why they were there in the first place, and housing third, fix it. That's what real compassion is. If you just grab them and take them off the street and don't do anything else, all you're doing is inviting a continuation and an expansion of the problem.
So on the housing first model, which is something that I've spoken in favor of, I always have a little bit of an asterisk next to that, because the one thing that kind of drives me nuts is whether we're talking about tiny home villages that we have here in Seattle, is they can be low barrier, meaning if you are addicted to heroin or you're an alcoholic, they'll bring you in and they won't require you to seek treatment. And that seems to be problematic in the sense of, you know, there are a lot of people who are homeless simply because they don't have a home, but there's a reason in a lot of these cases why they're out on the streets to begin with, and simply giving someone a home who's not actually treated their mental illness or their addiction seems self-defeating and just ultimately expensive.
That's exactly right, and that's why I say you got to go to housing second and housing third if you're really going to be compassionate. And that's, you know, a lot of people who've created these policies, they actually mean well.
Mm-hmm.
But they really haven't thought this through, and they don't look at the evidence to see what the impact of their policies are. And that's the problem. And you know, you look at some cities, and they have virtually no homelessness. You look at a city like Tokyo, which has more people than New York City. They have virtually no homelessness there. But they have some policies there that we could learn from. They have a buy right policy, which means, you know, you can't stop the development of, you know, an affordable housing complex with, like you have in San Francisco, just one person complaining and saying, mm-hmm. no, we don't want this here.
Just joining me, we're talking with the HUD Secretary, Dr. Ben Carson, about homelessness, not just in Seattle, but this issue that's plaguing a lot of American cities. Is there an American city right now that you think is doing things correctly?
You can go to hundreds of American cities, like in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
And you're not going to see these problems. For one thing, the costs there are much lower. And again, you take a place like Los Angeles, where 80% of the property is zoned for single-family housing with a certain amount of property. That's a big problem in and of itself. You throw on top of that the density restrictions, the height restrictions, the noise restrictions, the environmental restrictions, the energy, the water, the historic preservation. By the time you get through with all that, the latest of which is you have to have solar panels, who's going to be able to afford it?
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And we've got similar situations here where we're even going forward with a tax on heating oil, which directly impacts people who tend to be older because they've been in these homes for a long time, and we're just making it more unaffordable for them. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, because we see a lot of this happening in Seattle, that it seems like a lot of these problems are made worse because of this blind loyalty to an ideological perspective. In Seattle, of course, the ideology is far to the left. But the same argument could be made to folks who just look at things only from a conservative lens. How much of that do you think plays a role in all of this?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is kind of relax on the blame game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of blame to go around. Forget about the blame, and let's concentrate on the solutions. You know, what do we have to do to get these people off the street and into a better situation? We have to think both in terms of the acute phase and the more chronic, the long-term phase. And, you know, just taking them off the street doesn't work in the long term. It works in the short term, but only for a little while. You have to have the appropriate types of wraparound services in order to prevent the problem from continuing. And this is what, you know, a lot of people don't seem to understand. They just want to get them out of their sight, and they think everything's okay. But believe me, they're multiplying out of your sight, and you're going to come back to bite you. We also need to look at the fact that when we leave people on the street, defecating, urinating, vomiting, doing whatever, you're creating a health hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for those people, but for people who are transient through that area. And eventually, to all the people in the area, you're really setting up the circumstances for an epidemic to occur. And that's one of the reasons that the federal government is looking into this. You know, we can't just complain about it.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that there is a responsibility in terms of the health of the nation to do something about this. We always prefer to do that in conjunction with the local government, with the state and the local government. That's the way things work. Things that I've seen really effective around this country, we have partnerships, federal, state, local, nonprofits, for-profits, faith-based organizations, and if we could learn to do that, believe me, we could solve this problem pretty quickly.
Well, and there's a fight right now going on between local and federal having to do with heroin injection sites. Obviously, the federal government has gotten involved in the case in Philadelphia, but here in Seattle, they're wanting to move forward with heroin injection sites. So from your perspective as not just the HUD secretary, but also a doctor, what's your take?
My take is that we should actually use the brain that God gave us and, you know, recognize that, you know, facilitating dependency on drugs is not a solution. It's certainly not a good solution. At the same time, recognizing that addiction is a difficult problem. It's not something that you just say, okay, I'm not going to use heroin tomorrow. And because you may intend to do that when you say that, but that's not the way addiction works. There are changes that actually occur to the brain. It only takes like 2 weeks for those changes to occur, but it takes on an average of 12 to 18 months for them to be reversed. That has to be integrated into your treatment plan when you're dealing with these things. And if you don't do that, you're just spitting in the ocean.
Last couple questions. You've been very generous with your time today, Dr. Carson. What have you learned about homelessness since taking this job? Something that you didn't necessarily know of or really think about before you got your hands in the whole mess?
Well, I think maybe the thing that I learned the most is that, this is going to sound strange, but there's a poverty industry in this country. And there are people who sing a good song but are perfectly content to see other people living in squalor and suffering. And in many cases, being dependent so that they can control these individuals. And that's a terrible thing to say, but unfortunately, it does exist. And we have to, you know, forget about those people, and we have to think about what is the right thing to do. If that was your father or your mother or your sister or your brother, what would you want done? What would you want done if it was you? And if we think about it that way, and we look at the tremendous resources that we have at a time of great economic prosperity, probably the most that we've ever seen, this is the time to fix it. You know, you fix the hole in the roof while the sun's shining. You don't wait until a storm. And this is what we need to be thinking about right now and working together to do it. You know, we the American people are not each other's enemies. We have real enemies, ISIS and people like that who want to destroy us. We should not allow ourselves to be manipulated into thinking that we're each other's enemies and thereby impeding any progress we can make on any effort.
100% agree. Last question for you, unrelated to this issue, just because it happened just a few hours ago. The Democrats obviously announced two articles of impeachment against the president, one for abuse of power, one for obstruction. Of course, they were talking about bribery, but all of a sudden, they're not talking about that anymore. I suppose the focus grouping didn't go so well. What is your initial reaction to today's announcement after just essentially 2.5 years of trying to impeach the president?
Well, you know, it's a sad situation that we've gotten into because, again, I have a tendency to like to look at the long-term effects of anything. Mm-hmm. And if we lower the bar for impeachment to ridiculous levels, that's all we're going to be doing is fighting each other from now until the end of time. And, you know, fortunately for us, there are some wise people. They're called the American electorate. And believe me, they are watching what is going on. There are a lot of smart people out there, and they're thinking, this is what some people think is justice? Well, if we have those people in power and they disagree with me, I guess they're going to treat me the same way. That's what people are going to be thinking. And, you know, I'm just very hopeful that we can correct the situation. The good thing is, you probably know, they're moving forward on the USMCA.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that can really have a very increased positive effect on our economy. And obviously, when you have a burgeoning economy and you have more jobs and you have people looking for jobs, you have a situation where you can bring a lot of very dependent people into a self-sufficient atmosphere.
Well said. Dr. Ben Carson, thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon. You know, listening back and reflecting on what it is you said about homelessness, it seems hard to imagine that people will disagree, but I fear that the ideology behind all of this is just getting in the way. So keep speaking all that you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Your solutions to this actually have been shown to work, so I hope some folks here in Seattle actually get on board. Dr. Ben Carson, thank you so much.
And you continue to be a voice of bravery out there.
I will do my best. It's not always easy. Thank you so much for joining the show.
All righty. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Obviously, we went a little bit long with Dr. Ben Carson, but I kind of get the sense that when you're talking to any secretary of a cabinet position, like, probably go ahead and talk to the guy. What I found most interesting about my interview, And if you want to help me spread this interview, because I think the city of Seattle has to be called out for some of the nonsense that they're engaged in, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Something that stood out to me was there should be, in a nonpartisan world, nothing controversial about anything he just said. He's someone who says housing first. He's someone who says you should be able to build up. He's someone who says, yeah, heroin injection is not really good for addicts. That, yes, it lacks compassion to allow people to use a sidewalk as a toilet. Is that a controversial set of statements there? If I told you that that statement came from Jenny Durkin, don't you think progressives wouldn't go crazy? The average one, not about the activist class. What he's saying is not controversial, and yet because of who he is, because he's a Republican, because he's attached to the Trump administration, he gets completely dismissed. I think that we dismiss smart people and smart solutions to the detriment of our communities. Why? Because Seattle loves to be known as this woke progressive city. They don't take any help from the evil conservatives. They're all evil. They want people to live out on the street. Is that what you took from Dr. Carson? Because I didn't. I was inspired hearing from him. And you guys should be inspired when you hear from him or from anybody on a national stage who decides to not just pay attention to what's happening in our neighborhoods, but to actually reach out and come on and talk to us. Because it's very quick and easy to think that we're completely forgotten by the Trump administration or by anyone in this Trump administration. Very easy in Seattle, especially if you're a conservative here. But they're listening. They're engaged. So text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you a link to my interview with Dr. Carson. It's accompanied by a story. Please do me a favor and read it and post it on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn, so we start to get some of these common sense, not even necessarily conservative policy, just common sense policies out there, so we can make a dent in the homelessness situation that we have here. You have so much more power than you want to acknowledge. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. We're back at the top of the hour.